Good evening, this is The Right Side here on Gripped. I'm Gary Kavanagh. I'm here today with my friend and colleague Michael Dwyer. Here are the stories we want to talk about today. We want to talk about a story that recently came to light about Joe Loughnane, who is the chairman of the Galway Anti-Racism Network. I actually recently published an article that looked into Mr. Loughnane's past, and there are a couple of things there I think people may not have expected to see. After that, we want to go into little bit of a chat about vaping, and we're seeing a lot of concerns in the news about, or a lot of notes about illnesses related to vaping, or is vaping safe? So we want to actually have a little chat about what the studies show, don't show, and what the CDC itself, which is the American Center for Disease Control, is actually saying. People are reporting the CDC have said certain things that they haven't, so we want to just say this is exactly what they have said and this is what it means. So I suppose we will go into the Joe Loughnane thing. I suppose I will open that as I wrote it. Joe Loughnane has come to kind of national prominence recently. He was the chap who first reported Noel Grealish's comments in Uachtaráid about African and Syrian refugees and kicked off a bit of a conversation on racism. He's been in the Irish media for a couple of years. You might have seen him on like The Last Word with Matt Cooper or on The Independent. He wrote for The Journal for a while. He's been on a fair amount of particularly Irish radio programmes, as has the Galway Anti-Racism Network, of which he is the chair. During the week, screenshots emerged of Joe talking to an unknown person. And in the screenshots, Joe is seen telling him to kill himself. He calls a couple of racially motivated slurs. And it's just an unpleasant interact. So I reached out to Joe Loughnane to try and get the full context of those screenshots. He refused to give it, so we went ahead with what we had. But in doing so, because we were talking about him in the present, I also looked into his past, and I found a couple of things, such as in 2013, he was charged with two counts of assault on two Gardaí from some sort of fracas after a Labour conference.
Right.
Might be worth noting here that Joe is involved with People for Profit, so probably one of those left-on-left squabbles. I was also able to find a video of him from 2014 disrupting a speech, which was a fantastic named speech. So he disrupted a speech by a professor called Johnson, Professor Alan Johnson.
Yeah.
And you can hear the video, I think we have it on Gripped, and you can find it around the place. He calls this professor a fucking piece of shit. He calls him a fucking Zionist. Repeatedly tells him to get the fuck off our campus.
Our campus.
Refers to it as his campus a couple of times as well.
Yeah, that's curious. What's his position on the university?
I think he says he's been there for 10 years, but I think he's just a student.
He's still a student.
I believe some of his family work there. But what I really liked about that is Johnson is not... He is a Zionist. He'll freely admit that. But he's not right-wing. He's a prominent socialist intellectual in Britain. And the title of his speech was Solidarity, Not Boycotts, The Progressive Case Against Boycotting Israel. So quite a friendly, lovely speech. You can find the transcript of it online.
Yeah.
And I also actually find out that Mr. Loughnane used to work for Cage. Now, Cage in the UK is, their job is, or what they're meant to be about is detainees, Islamic detainees, particularly those involved in Guantanamo Bay. So they've got their outreach director is a former prisoner at Guantanamo Bay, Mohsin Beg. Beg is considered to be one of the most prominent supporters of the Taliban in Britain. Cage is generally, they take a very strong sort of Islamic position on a lot of things. So their spokespeople have spoken in favour of Sharia law, the establishment of an Islamic caliphate. There's a great interview of their research director with, I think, Andrew Neil.
Okay.
Where Andrew Neil just lists off positions and asks him would he condemn them. So, and the guy refuses to condemn the idea that women should be stoned to death for adultery, refuses to condemn the idea that homosexuality is evil, refuses to condemn the idea that Jews are descended from pigs and apes, which I'm not really sure how that works, but it's great because the research director just refuses and then at the end goes, well, I'm not a theologian.
Yeah, and also, why do people obsess about these particular details? It's always the stoning and the throwing off the roofs and...
And the female genital mutilation, which they also refuse.
Yeah, why, know, why not? There's lovely stuff in there. Why not talk about the loveliness? The people are very negative.
Yeah, it actually got bad enough that Amnesty International, who had been working with them, broke off all contact with them. And said that their comments were at odds with human rights principles, particularly their refusal to condemn violence, such as the stoning to death of adulterous women and female genital mutilation. That made sharing any future platform with Cage impossible.
And Mr. Lucknan has an association with Cage.
He worked for them.
All right, you work for people that... Yeah, maybe you don't approve, but a job is a job.
Well, sorry, I think it was an unpaid internship.
Okay, so not so much a job as...
Well, I don't know, he was over there for 6 to 7 months in London. I believe Cage is based in London. It was an interesting article. What I was interested in was how easy it was to find stuff like that. Yeah. Though. Like, he had his work with Cage on his LinkedIn profile.
There's no sense that anything was going to be hidden or anything needed.
No, the only one that was difficult to find was the assault charge. And he had written about it on a blog he had previously run, but everything had been deleted. But I was able to pull internet archives, and run back through them till before he had deleted it, and I was able to find posts where he was asking people to contribute money because he was asked to pay a €1,400 fine in lieu of conviction, and he crowdfunded that money.
Did you ask her, Mr. McMahon, in and of himself, I have no particular interest in. He's one of, I'm sure there are, I wouldn't say lots of people like him in Ireland, but on the left there are people. What I find curious, and the only reason I find him, how he's managed to, it's almost create a position for himself where he has now become a go-to person. When people, anywhere, anything that happens, I was going to say West of the Shannon, actually, the last time I think I saw him interviewed, he wasn't even a Connacht or a Galway issue, he was a Dublin national.
No, his national profile has really increased because of his involvement with UCTAD. And that was actually part of why I was interested in this. It was mostly because, well, if he's coming to prominence and he has these issues with his background, why is no one discussing it at all? Like, I mean, if you have that you've worked with Cage on your LinkedIn, cursory examination and a reading of the Wikipedia page of Cage should give you enough information that you would question whether or not this is someone you want to speak on racial affairs. And no one did that.
And he's been chosen both by the Independent and the media and RT to be a source and origin of opinion on the subject of... racial affairs and what's going down in the West of Ireland and beyond. I think that there is probably a pattern to this. There's a history of how you do this kind of thing, and he's done it successfully. But we really shouldn't. Why should we be listening to this man at all? There's a laziness at the heart of the medium, or I think. I really do think it's more than an ideological bias or a philosophical position. It's just, I couldn't be bothered. He'll have something good to say. He's always good for a soundbite. Who can we get? Oh, well, he has that thing against racism, doesn't he? Well, everybody's against racism. How could you not be a supporter? Because all he does is defend people from racism. And you just go off, you put a mic in front of him, he gives you a quote. Away you go.
All of these places have researchers. So, for instance, Lognane has appeared a couple of times on The Last Word with Matt Cooper, talking about racism, and he was on earlier in the year talking about Liam Neeson's comments and if they made him racist. I mean, The Last Word is prominent enough. It should have a team of researchers. And I find the idea that you would invite someone on and not Google him.
Yes.
Very strange.
And we all know at this stage that a good Google will find the most tremendous things. I mean, famously, Morgan Kelly was able to predict the crash after spending 2 hours on Google. He didn't need any other form of research. An hour of Googling the gentleman in question would have found enough stuff for you to maybe make a question whether or not this was a suitable person Fiati in loco, some kind of authority on the subject.
I mean, on the very first page of the Google results for Joe Logan, there is his LinkedIn, which has the cage, and there is also a link to the video of him disrupting that talk, in which he's quite aggressive, which I talked to him myself and he was very pleasant. But there's a link to him banging on tables, screaming at someone that they're a piece of shit, telling them to get off campus, on the very first page of Google results. So either they didn't check at all, or they didn't care.
Or both.
Or both, yeah. And I mean, I'm just saying, if you wanted someone as a racial justice spokesperson, I would imagine you would generally try and avoid any link to organizations working with the Taliban or supporting the Taliban.
Yeah,
just as a general point.
Well, when you put it like that, yeah, I mean, supporting the Taliban is generally regarded as following the Catholic of a bad thing to do. Let's stay away from Taliban supporting entities. Even in Galway. Anyway, there's a...
Cage was also the organisation, the research director. Do you remember Jihadi John?
I do.
Cage, the research director of Cage, described him as a beautiful young man.
Oh.
I can't remember how many people Jihadi John beheaded, but...
But he was a beautiful... Well, he's a beautiful soul. Or maybe he was a fine thing. I don't know what the intent...
Beautiful... A beautiful young man, yeah. Which is, I think, was one of the comments that got most of their funding pulled from them.
It's amazing how sensitive people can be these days.
I mean, you call an ISIS executioner a beautiful young man and people are
up
just
in arms,
pulling away the money. Yet the only annoyance about the story I have is that the screenshots I got were not the full conversation. No one would give me the full conversation. So I asked Joe for it, both before it was clear we were going to publish and after it was clear we were going to publish. Because, as I said to him, like, the screenshots make Joe look pretty bad, to be blunt. But as I said, look, if there's a greater context to this, if you send me... Because this was all on Messenger, so everything will be saved. He would have it. And I said, look, if this changes it, or you just want to put your side of the story, send it on to me at any moment up to publication. I will take that into account. And if it changes the story and it makes this look, or it gives a reason for this, well, obviously you're going to come out of this looking better. And he didn't take up that offer, which personally I would have preferred had he, just because it's a more complete understanding of the situation you're writing
about.
Sure,
it's a fairer proposition ultimately.
Yeah, I did get referred to as having the ethics of a piranha for publishing it anyway. And as I said, it's like, well, I reached out to this man by email, email once, Facebook Messenger, text multiple times. I called him.
Yeah.
I made every effort to try and get this man to give me anything he had that would make him look better. I did way more than you've ever had to do with most Irish newspapers you're going to get. Now, I will say I did enjoy, there's a piece in the Irish Times today, which is called How Far Right is Exploiting Immigration Concerns in Uachtaráid. And it's entirely about anti-immigration group, which it doesn't seem to think there's any link between that and the far right. A bit weird considering a lot of the anti-immigration we've seen in Europe is more on the left side of things. But that's neither here nor there.
One of those odd contradictions or apparent contradictions.
Yeah. So the great thing is Joe Lognain is quoted in it, but he has a fantastic quote given the article we're talking about. Because his quote is, he's talking about people in Lognain and how they're being exploited by far-right individuals. And it says, most people in Uachtaráid would have no idea who these individuals are. They would have no reason to suspect their motives, which, considering Lognain is also not a native to the area and is very much on the people for a proper candidate, so left or far left, I love the idea that the Irish Times went to him and went, you know what? This people for a proper candidate is the perfect person to give us an unbiased view of the impact of the far right in this town that he is also apparently interested in. Because it kind of seems like interested parties on all sides of the political spectrum are most likely in this place now, because it's of interest to them.
Yeah, it's of interest to them, probably not so much, but they feel that everybody has to have an opinion about it. So if you have to jolly well go and be there and show that you have an opinion because you it's one of those things about which you're supposed to have an opinion. You can't really go and say, ah, to be honest, I couldn't give a flying fuck. That doesn't wash, apparently. You put your serious face on and you talk.
But no, it's the Irish Times article is, it's fine. It's as you would expect it would be from the Irish Times.
Anyway, I think that's enough of Mr. Lockdown. I think he's been getting far too much publicity from theirs. If you like that. This is not a big story, but did you see this story about the Irish Rail encouraging people to change their travel pattern?
Yes, they've got a new website out that will I've looked at. It's very fancy. I'd prefer it was less fancy.
To be fair, on first sight, this story seemed to be Irish Rail complaining that they were far too busy in the mornings, early mornings, and could people not go at different times? Because it was causing them all sorts of trouble and very bad for the staff, and they're getting hectically busy. And really, no, people should organise themselves better. No, it's not actually, it's a little bit more sensible than that. Actually, quite a good idea. One of the things that's very useful about Google Maps, as our listener will know, is that unlike the older map systems, it uses, I presume it's information that Google collects from the Android telephones on which it is installed, but it gives you live updates. So say you're trying to get out of Dublin and you know it's tea time and you're heading for that Bray exit, you're going to have to go past the Bray exit, and if you hit it exactly the wrong time, you could be just sitting there somewhere between Stillorgan and Cherrywood for 20 minutes. Just absolutely stationary. 20 minutes, half an hour, it's horrible, and then creeping on for the rest of the time. And Google will tell you that and say, oh, go up through it, it's scary. Now, this, as I understand it, would give you a fairly a good idea of the busyness of the trains, of the commuters, particularly through commuter trains, as it happens. And you could choose to maybe postpone or to anticipate your journey on that basis. So, how you said you found the website difficult to or fancy? It's fancy, but once you've looked at it a little bit, it's not hard to use.
No, it's not hard to use. I would just prefer a list. Like I use this line occasionally, and at the times they're talking about, I don't really need anything with bar graphs and that could take time to load. I literally just want a list that says go now, presuming I use it at all.
Run quickly with the train. There's a seat, third carriage down.
Yeah, I haven't tried this on a phone, and that would be an interesting one.
See how it presents it. Anyway, I just think it's, on first sight, I thought it was a funny thing, but actually it's quite a good little move from the Irish Rail. If they could...
I'm also curious how accurate it is.
Well, yeah, that's... In a sense, that's what my point was going to be, my concern. I don't know...
It says its source is the National Rail Census 2018. But nothing is... There's graphs that are coloured green or red and go to different heights.
Mm.
But I don't know, is a full bar maximum capacity, or is it you can still get on the train, it's just not a great idea?
I would have gone for maximum capacity. But maybe you're right, I'm not sure. The other thing is, we haven't had brilliant punctuality results from the train. It seems to be over the little while. And for some reason, the buses are going the same as the intercity buses. I think that one of the oddities is, certainly in the trains that I take and the buses I take, there is an absolutely consistent, persistent and predictable amount of lateness on certain routes at certain times. And I've never understood why the timetables don't just say, okay, yeah, rather than the let's pretend it's going to take 55 minutes to do that, let's admit that it's going to take an hour and a quarter and actually put up the real times the bus is going to arrive there, rather than have you standing around for half an hour wondering if the fucking thing is going to come at all. This was not a bus errand, to be fair, but a private bus company. A friend of mine got on at the airport. He went out of the airport and stopped at McDonald's. Turned to the people and said, I've been driving all day. I'm going to get a coffee and I'm going to have a break for half an hour. And I'm sorry, but that's it. They're looking at him. Okay. Yeah, that's fine. You know, you deserve a break. But it was like the man was about was the verge of tears saying, you just couldn't handle it anymore.
Just want a coffee.
Just want a coffee and a break, for God's sake.
So I don't know if this thing may actually be useful. It's peaktime.ie, if anyone has any use for it.
Anyway.
God, it's a sign of how slow a news day it is when you're talking about a bloody Irish Rail press release.
Well, I'll tell you, if you want to talk slow news days, our last little is a university, the president of UL, one of my alma maters, has decided he wants to ban vaping on all college campuses.
No. So he wants the government to ban vaping on all college campuses. UL has already banned college campuses, vaping on college campuses. At which point you would think, your job is done. That's your remit. UL. Stick to it.
I'm trying to remember. It's blah blah number of years since I was in UL. But how much does that mean they ban smoking on the campus as well? Is it a...
They could do the American thing that we've seen in a couple of places, where they ban vaping but not smoking.
Oh, no, just see here. University banned vaping and smoking on campus.
Oh, there you
go. In 2018.
Can they actually ban smoking? I mean, sure, they can stop the sale of those products, but can they actually... Do they have the power to stop you from smoking in an open area on their place? I suppose they could...
Private...
I suppose they could, yeah, it's private property.
But is it all private property? I'm not sure if it is. If it's public property, then I don't know. And, of course, well, thank God it's UL, which, as you know, is a very serious place and full of very fit athletic people because it's a big sports campus there. And thank God none of them would say, for example, smoke any of those marijuana cigarettes.
Mm.
I'm sure that's disappeared also.
So this is, I think... We've seen an upsurge in this sort of thing as we've started to see health warnings about vaping coming out of America. Lung injuries have started to be reported in America. Yeah. None in Europe. I was unable to find any case in Europe of anything similar to what the CDC is saying they're seeing over there.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're basically saying is there's been an outbreak of some sort of lung injury that they believe is linked to vaping. They have not been able to actually prove there is a link to vaping. It's just all of the cases that they've been able to determine, the person has used either an e-cigarette or a vaping device at some point. Also, near apparently, most have used e-cigarettes containing THC, which would be the active ingredient in marijuana.
Just to briefly go back to Dr. Fitzgerald, he's quoted as saying, "We can see by the introduction of flavoured vaping products and other marketing initiatives that big business is now aggressively pushing this product to young people in particular. We should waste no time in mounting a robust challenge to these forces." And that begins with a ban. But, okay, first of all, a challenge begins with a ban. I thought it would end with a ban. That you could have tried everything else and then you ban something. Right? Because whatever you think of this, and it's not easy to work out what to think about this based on the science and the outcomes, the actual health outcomes. A ban is the last thing, because the ban is an arbitrary decision to remove freedom from an individual citizen, an adult, to do something which they choose they want to do, which does not harm other people. And I think that if you're talking about something which I'm doing to myself, which doesn't harm other people, then it really should be very, very well, a long way down the road and with very well-established facts that we go to the point of banning something. But he also, it's curious for a university like UL, which is so closely connected to industry, he says, big business. Now, nobody uses the phrase big business unless they're trying to be pejorative, you know? Small business is always a nice thing. Small and medium-sized businesses. We all love SMEs. Small and medium-sized, oh, love big business. Now, what evidence is there that they are particularly pushing the product on young people, Gary?
Well, I mean, as with most things about vaping, there's not a great deal of evidence anywhere.
It's not... I don't know. can it be advertised in Ireland? Other, I mean,
I believe so. Wasn't there an issue recently where, I'm not sure about the media, but I think wasn't there an issue recently where one of the Lewis's got like a wraparound that had that had some e-cigarette on it?
Possibly, because the only kind of advertising that I can think that I've seen is, you know, those stands, pull-up stands that you sometimes see in supermarkets. Or maybe some banner advertising, some static banner advertising, but nothing on the radio or the TV or in the papers. And it's my experience. I have vaped. I don't do them anymore. But that the people that I saw going to mine were all, I would say 99% were older people, I'm talking like 30s up, who were trying to give up smoking. When I was in the vaping shop, when I was there, I suppose several dozen times, I never saw anybody under the age of 20, shall we say. I'm not saying there aren't people out there, but remember, there are also people at the age of 10 who start to smoke. But let's get to the point. The point is, everybody's going on about, the phrase that we keep hearing is, there is no long-term evidence, and no long-term studies, no long-term science, which shows that vaping is safe. Is that true?
Well, it's true in a technical sense.
Well, it's true because there are no long-term studies.
There are no long-term studies. Vaping is, the technology is a decade old. It only really became big 2015, 2016. And so when people say, well, there's no long-term studies, well, no one has been using it long-term.
Yeah.
What they can say is chemically, it should be less harmful than tobacco. And they can show that because there's less tar. But other than that, there's a sort of, is there any secondary impact? As I said, it is interesting how this is being reported, because they're all being reported as vaping related illnesses. Yes. However, as I said, most said they were doing THC in the vaping pens. Some said THC and nicotine. Some said they weren't doing all. But that is a self-report, so they may simply not be being totally honest. Mm-hmm. About their consumption habits. But none of these things are designed to smoke THC. So it could equally be as reasonable to say that there are mysterious THC-related illnesses. But that doesn't seem to be the direction people want to go with this.
No. And again, excuse me. I'm slightly puzzled. I don't understand. Now, because there are quite a few people, science-type people, who are not necessarily shills for the vaping industry, but just independent scientists who said that vaping looks like a very good way of getting people off of cigarettes. It seems to be more successful, say, than just cold turkey, or indeed using other nicotine-based products for whatever. Vaping seems to be more successful for getting people off fags. And there are studies out there who say that there may be risks that we don't know of, but on the face of it, it looks like vaping is 97%, 98% safer than smoking. We know smoking is very bad for you. We know smoking is very dangerous. So something which potentially can get people off fags, why have we got this reaction, and increasingly strong reaction? In the absence, it seems to me, the absence of any new hard evidence. Where's it coming from? Why are people so pissed off about it?
No, I mean, in one sense, it's a certain amount of this is a reasonable reaction to a health concern. The problem is the sort of total move to remove things, and the sort of, I mean, you know, we can't obviously say with certainty, but anyone who was smoking any sort of THC or cannabis-based cartridge would have to be smoking a cartridge that is not coming from approved manufacturers.
Yeah.
That is of most likely illicit manufacturing. And so there just seemed to be this movement to, these things happened, they were bad, therefore we've got to ban these, even if they are, I mean, let's say it's the problem of the cartridges they were smoking because they were not made by approved manufacturers.
Yeah.
And so therefore aren't privy to any quality controls that the FDA would put on, or any restrictions the CDC would recommend.
Yes.
In which case, this movement would be absolutely pointless. But there is a tendency to overreach, I think, in these areas. And people see the immediate consequences, even if they're negative, but don't see any positive consequences, because positive consequences for vaping are the absence of cancers and things like that you would pick up through smoking. So it's very difficult to defend something when your best line is it works because we can't see that it's working,
yeah.
Barring a long-term study that actually shows reduction in cancer.
Yeah, and we're waiting for that, and that could be interesting. And listen, it may well turn out, I have no particular bad skill in this fight, it may turn out that vaping is dangerous, maybe as dangerous as smoking, less dangerous, or moderately, if nothing else, the immediate default setting of the ban, and this is not just with vaping, but increasingly across so much of what we consume and so much of our private lives, the default setting that if it's something is not immediately and demonstrably good for you, and possibly bad for you, even if it's not doing harm to anybody else, and I'm consuming that product in perfect understanding and perfect knowledge if such a thing existed of what that thing's going to do for me, they still want to ban it.
And actually, it is an interesting thing when we're talking about whether or not it's the actual vaping things or whether or not this is to do with illicit cartridges, and that's why we're only seeing it in America. Because this was an issue with general vaping technology.
Yeah.
It will be a global issue because you can buy these things globally.
This is true.
So I was actually able to find a quote from a professor at Boston University School of Public Health. And that was his take, that this does not appear to be associated with, he says traditionally sold or legally sold e-cigarettes, which is a bit of a weird term for something that's only existed for a decade, but with illicit and sometimes counterfeit THC vaping cartridges. If you Google THC cartridge or vaping cartridge,
yeah.
I mean, there's articles on how these things are everywhere in Rolling Stones. There's reports from some of the more pro-marijuana kind of publications like High Times.
Yeah.
Discussing concerns with using them because they are unregulated, because they're illegal.
Gary, do you not think this is a wonderful, that we now live in a wonderful world where people are being told, don't smoke that marijuana like that. It's unregulated and untested. You want?
It is actually quite funny.
You know?
It is a small joy.
The FDA should be testing your marijuana for you. Make sure it's safe.
I mean, they clearly know what they're doing.
Anyway, listen. Anybody's out there who's smoking, stop it. If you're out there and you're vaping, think about stopping it. If you're smoking marijuana, well, why not come round and we'll have some coffee. Other than that, I don't know. Gary, are we back on Wednesday?
We're back on Wednesday, and remember, you can protect yourself from vaping illness by following the CDC's recommendation and not adding THC or CBD oils that you've bought off the street to your e-vaping.
I'm sure a listener would take that to his heart. Bye-bye.
All the best.